looking for something. A new way, a new understanding, a connection, some comfort. You've got questions, and Light on Living puts the spotlight on all the answers so you can shine. Lift and lighten the load of life's challenges and learn simple and easy ways to live a healthy, happy life. You'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you. You're invited to hear new, see different, and feel more as Lisa shines the light on living.
Welcome, everyone, to Light on Living. I'm your host, Lisa Berry, and today is the I always hate to end an interview series, but it is the final day of our interview series with Magnetic Entrepreneurs for Women Leadership. And we have a very special guest who's actually live on location in New York. But you're actually from even further, because Dubai is even way more far away. So we're just happy that you're there. And so if anybody is hearing those buses go by, it's just the busyness of New York, isn't it?
Hi, Lisa. How are you? I'm so excited to be with you today.
Oh, well, welcome, everybody. We have Aisha Robert on with us, and I have to read you her bio. It is pretty exceptional and perfect fit for women leadership. And Aisha, I'm just going to read this because there's so much in here that I wanted to include it all, okay? So just bear with me while I share it with everybody, okay? So everyone, Aisha is a professional coach, head of culture, employee experience and employer brand at the local telecommunications operator, speaker, HR consultant, and writer. She brings 20 years of experience in marketing, sales, and operations, operating at board level from multinationals to startups, headquarters to operational units in products, services, processes, and human resources activities to provide insights, strategies, and support to clients. And you guys, you got to hear this, because the insights and strategies and supports are actually some of her pillar model that you'll want to know and follow. But a multiple degree holder from top universities and the business schools such as HULT, UC Berkeley, and the prestigious Mohammed bin Rashid Center for Leadership Development. She is a certified associate certified coach by member of the International Coach Federation, and Aisha is further certified as an organizational relationship system coach and the first Gallup Strengths Finder coach in the Middle East. Despite a demanding career, she makes time to be involved with the community and professional organizations, a member of the International Coach Federation, Secretarial General of the EITC Women's Council, board member of the Dubai Freelance Company, member of Singularity University Dubai Chapter, member of the German Emirates. Emirates Club, and board member of the Irish Society Club. She was honored with the ICF Middle East Prism Award for coaching. Oh, look at you, young lady. You're so tiny and young to do all this. My gosh. Oh, you're just nominated for the Emirates Women Award and Women in the Tech Award. My gosh, Aisha, you are just making waves, making changes for the better, and out there all the time.
We're trying to do our best, right, Lisa?
Yes. And so as I read your chapter is unique, actually, because I get to read your story, as everybody would when they pick up the book. But then you go on to give direction and help. And there's something that's very close to your heart, which is equality, equality for women, equality among all. Where does this driving passion for gender equality come from?
Well, I mean, Lisa, as you know, we're in the UAE, right? I mean, maybe you have heard in Saudi Arabia, they just allowed a woman to drive. So that is definitely something which is very progressive. Finally, we're moving into the right direction. The UAE has been far more open for a very long time. However, there's still a lot of work to be done if we want to have equal rights between male and female. There's a lot of work to be done in terms of culture. And from that aspect, I really think we have a lot of opportunities to give our experience coming from Germany into the UAE, being an Emirati Muslim, supporting women with all our experience that we can give them back, and thereby helping them to progress and advance. So gender diversity has always been very close to my heart. And I think from there, it's something that we can really drive forward and where we can make a difference.
Oh, and it is, and the difference it's making, and I'm jumping to the now and the future, but the difference it makes by having women be have equal thing. What is something that you yourself personally have just witnessed a shift in the essence of business culture because women are now in it?
Yeah. I think one significant shift has been made by our leader Sheikh Mohammed himself, when he announced that he wants to have a much more higher presentation of females in his own leadership level. So we have now 50% FNC, which is the Federal National Council representation, that was a target given by our government. So even from a government aspect, we have a very ambitious strategic goal of being the 25th country in 2021 in terms of gender equality. To support the United Nations Global Sustainability Goals. So I think from us, it's top down. So we as organizations, we want to also support our government, obviously, to support these targets.
How do you, like, were you in direct assistance with this?
Yes, alhamdulillah, I'm working together with the Dubai Women Establishment. As well as the UN, we have contact with them. They are supporting us in how we can transform our organizations. And our organization has been taken as one of the key pilot organizations to try out some of the strategies and best practices the United Nations, the UAE Gender Balance Council, and the Dubai Women's Establishment have established, to implement and see how we can drive that forward, to learn from, so that this can be adopted in other organizations as well.
I just, on a personal level, like, when you wake up in the morning, are you looking at the day like, oh, I've got to fight this to make it right, or are you waking up and looking at like, wow, I can't wait to just water these plants to grow, so the change is the growing plant? Like, which attitude do you wake up and kind of go forward with this?
I think the first question I ask myself when I wake up in the morning is, how can I add value today? And that is not only related to gender balance. This is basically everything that we do. How can we leave this world a better place than we found it in the morning?
Oh, I love that. Better than we found it. That's so beautiful in all areas. And I think that's a lovely thing that I've noticed, that, you know, with women, we're adding to that. There's something so interesting I read in your chapter. My mouth dropped. I read it and went, what? That makes so much sense, but I want to ask you about it. You've shared in your chapter that when a man is applying for a position, a new position, like an up-leveling position, compared to when a woman is wants to apply for that, a woman will make sure she's almost 90, almost 100% a match for the position, whereas, she's constantly, whereas a man, you mentioned that he only feels he needs to be about 20% a match, and he'll go after it. So, that blew my mind, and it totally made sense. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it.
I think it's – no, but, I mean, this is something that we as women, I think, need to step up as well and become self-aware as to what is it that we're doing for ourselves. If we want to grow as a human being, ideally, we need to look forward to challenges. So some issues which we generally have with our own self-confidence is that we want to be 100% ready for the position when we take it on. And therefore, we believe, okay, only then we can make an impact in that position. Whereas men, for them, it's a little bit different. They're seeking the challenge, and they think, by default, I can grow into this particular position, and I will learn as I want to go, right?
Yes.
Now, the challenge on this front is, if we already go and apply for a position where we are 80 or 90% matched, how much opportunity is there for us to learn? Very little, because we are already there. We already know all those things, right? So effectively, we don't grow as a leader.
I found that absolutely fascinating.
So I think there's an opportunity for us as women to step up and say, look, if we have an opportunity, even if the match is only 20% in terms of skills that we have already acquired, let's go for it. Let's drive it and let's take this position on board. We will get the support we need, and we have all the abilities within us. As long as we are willing to learn, we're going to make it.
That is okay, and I'm so glad you added that part, because so here we have a couple things, and if you could share with the listeners, what in our mindset could we shift so that we could go from the belief that we have to be 80 to 90% to like, what are we missing? Like, what is that mindset piece that we're missing so that we can allow ourselves to have confidence and step into that? That okay, it's 20% match. I can grow. I can do this. But what? How do they get from there, thinking they need all of it, to okay, I can grow?
The very first step is awareness. I really like that question, because on many, 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 many occasions, we are not aware of what we're doing to ourselves.
Yeah.
So if we know that by default we are hesitant to take up on new challenges, so by default, if we are aware that we are hesitant in order to ask for the promotion, then yes, we can do something about it. I mean, what can be measured can be managed. So the first very important thing for us is to be aware, what are those unconscious biases that lie within us as women? Once we're aware about those, then we can actually do something about it.
So beautifully said. So I love that. You actually talk about there's pillars, like I call them pillars, but they're more like quadrants of when we want to make change. You mentioned that it's not, we don't want to start necessarily from the bottom up, but you have mentioned
yes,
that we should start from that top down. Well,
top down, yes. A bottom up approach does not work. As many times we have tried it, where we see the small group looming up, it's great. You need to start forming a community. But if we really want to drive change and make an impact in an organization, it's important that it's supported by the board, by the chairs, by the CEO, that we have KPIs put in place in our organizations, that these KPIs are measured, integrated with the HR department, and then only we will see a difference. If the HR department and the leadership is not on board, we will not see a difference in terms of recruitment. We will not see a difference in terms of shortlisting of high potentials and having female leaders included in that. We will not see a difference in the advancements and promotions, even in the way we got rated when we do performance reviews. We have seen that females in general are rated lower than males, and that is just simply a bias, you know, from the leadership, because they are not aware as well what's happening. But then when you look at the statistics, you find out that actually there's a 30 or 40% lower ratings of females in the performance. So that is hindering them as well in the advancement, right?
Right.
It is important that these things are all measured and eyes kept upon, and then we can actually do something interfere and uplift females.
Yes, yes. What was that statement? You said something that can be, something can be measured?
What can be measured can be managed.
Managed. Yes, yes. I love that. Oh, it's so good. you even have a graph. Like, you're the only chapter, I think, with a little graph that we can follow and really have it. So that was very helpful, because when we look at all the different things that are necessary to do that, you mentioned, you know, step one, we ensure that leadership. The sponsorship. I'm going to ask you about coaching.
Yes.
Team coaching, mentoring, and sponsorship. So team coaching, touch on that a little bit there. What is that in the world of change?
So in team coaching, I basically sit down with teams or with groups of people, okay, and we can identify, for example, personal biases. We can educate our leaders on how to tackle gender balance challenges overall as a result. If I'm doing one-on-one coaching, then I'm working only with one single person to overcome certain challenges. And then we have the sponsorship aspect, where it's a senior leader who takes a personal vested interest into promoting and supporting, I would say, somebody of the lower rank. So these are the different models that we have. And then, obviously, the startup mentorship model. So if we look at all of those four, I believe each one of those has a place if we really want to tackle diversity and inclusion and make it two different.
And there's so much to those layers. You made me think of something. You used the term team coaching, and just all, you know, in my history of stuff, you know, we often use this word group coaching, but it has a different feel to it. Even, like, maybe that's the feminine heart, I don't know, but a team really has a more of a vision of a common goal feel to me.
Absolutely, yes.
Like they're really.
Whereas a group, you could have an organization where you have multiple people from multiple teams, different backgrounds, different ranks. Okay,
yeah.
To create an impact on that front, and there are certain coaching aspects which we look at in this environment, and then some challenges are team specific where we would like to look at the team coaching itself. So you would have the team leader obviously, and you will have all the people who know each other fairly well in this particular team, and there are then certain impacts which we can create on that front. So in group coaching, we tackle general standards where a person itself can take something away. So it's similar to the one-on-one coaching approach, just on a larger scale, all right, because it's not that personalized. In team coaching, we're tackling specific challenges for that particular team. So if we see there are particular low ratings and that in this team, we can take these individual challenges and work with them as to how we can overcome them.
What a beyond fabulous definition of that. That was so clear. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
You know, it's because in our lives, like I'm thinking, like I'm still blown away. I'm thinking, okay, what in my life have I not accepted this new challenge because I want it to be perfect? And then I thought, okay, I like this. I have an awareness now. So now I want to look at my life. And I'm looking at the words, a mentor. How... In our own personal lives, how do we go about looking for a mentor and choosing the right one for us?
Okay. So first of all, we do need to have only one mentor. Okay.
Oh.
Mentorship is not necessarily only a one-to-one relationship, right?
Okay.
You can have many mentors for different things, or maybe for the same thing, you might even want to have two different mentors or three different mentors, because each of those mentors have something else to give. When we look for a mentor, we look at his particular experiences which he has gone through, okay, and how these experiences can benefit us in our own career, how we can take his advice. So there might be certain things this particular mentor has done versus another mentor has done some different things. So sometimes we need different advice from different people. Same like sometimes we ask our mom, we ask our dad, we ask our sisters, we ask our friends, and then we form an opinion. The same is how it goes with a mentorship. But always, when we select the mentors, it always depends on what is it exactly that we're looking for, what experiences do we need at this stage, and then just ask them, would you like to be my mentor? And many times those people are very flattered, you know, to take you on board and will support you. So it is a great way of establishing a relationship which can last for many, many years and even end up into a friendship.
What you just said there, what is this, everybody listening? This is a perfect question for you to ask yourself when you're looking for the mentor. What experience do I need at this stage? Oh my gosh, that is so beyond perfect. Oh, I love it. You know, and the difference, I love when I think of coaching, being a life coach myself, when we were said, you know, we never give advice. And I love that you mentioned for mentoring, that's where the stage that you want to give advice, because they've done it. They've walked
absolutely
in those shoes ahead. That, and so now when we move into the sponsor role or the sponsorship, what does that mean? What stage is that?
So if I'm having a mentor, this person is guiding me, you know, I can ask him for questions. For example, if I have a challenging meeting coming up, how can I, how is I manage this particular meeting? How can I manage office politics? How can I manage myself through and navigate myself through the organization? But as a mentor, although many times it can end up in more to be, become a sponsorship, as a mentor, I don't necessarily need to have this personal vested interest wherein I, as a mentor, are then promoting this particular person if a vacancy is coming up, for example, right? So if the relationship has morphed into a sponsorship, the sponsorship will take you under his wing as if you are his, like, kind of, you know, like a parent-child relationship. Okay, so this is my child, and I want to make sure that this child succeeds. Right? So I will through my agreement with this person, which most times happens informally, I will then even actively look for opportunities, bigger projects, different roles this person could take on to really help him. So if the next question is coming back, who would be great for that role, the mentor would step up and say, please look at that person. I have worked with this person. I'm 100% confident that this person can do the job.
Oh, wow.
This is so fascinating to me. This is, it's like in everything, we have this in the government, we have this in our family unit, we have this in, like you said, you know, yes, the parents, even the school, when we go to school, there's all these roles, and you're so right. None of this has anything to do with gender. Right now, you saying all those things, had their gender wouldn't come into play there.
Yes, it's true. I mean, like, see, in many cases, men have already figured that out, that you need mentors, that you need sponsors, and they are already actively going and enlisting those when they're entering organizations. However, for us as females, it's not so common that we have to go there and say, oh, actually, we need a sponsor or a mentor. It's something new to us, alien. Yani, not every single organization is promoting us, and many times we're not aware that such a concept even exists. So as soon as we can become aware of that, we can actually go and actively enlist those people. And many times, I mean, I have not come across a single mentor who has turned me down.
Oh, good. You're able to locate the right ones for you. When you talk about strategy, so
yes,
when we have a goal, we, you know, wanting to have, you know, more gender equality, we have to come up with that strategy. What is involved in strategy development, and what is the first step?
All right. So when we started out with our women council, we said the first thing we want us to be, we don't want to be like a club of females who are just seen as some woman drinking coffee all day and chatting and meeting, you know, this is what many people have.
Yes.
When I talk about this kind of councils, we said, no, we want to run it as a business. And I think this is what helps us as well, moving this forward and championing this initiative all the way up to the board. That's when we sat down and say, okay, what are the impacts that we can create? How can we measure that? How can we put KPIs behind it? What do we want in terms of the employee life cycle? How do we attract the different genders? How do we move them through? So how do we reward them? How do we train them until it's advancing, attracting, the rewarding, and as well as the learning piece? How do we develop them? So we have all those four streams, and then we looked at the different levels. We need to create an impact at the leadership level and impact the leadership. We need to impact the culture and the mindset of people. So what activities can be listed down under those? What communications have to go out? What kind of role models do we have to establish and do we have to showcase in order to advance that and send the right messages out to the employees? So when we sat down and looked at all those different pillars and the strategic levers, then we could come up with a very clear roadmap with a clear budget where we say, okay, these are the impacts that we want to create. We will create them over this timeline that's in it for the company. I mean, we have the revenue, the positive revenue impacts, which have been shown to be very effective in organizations with high diversity. But we have also other strategic goals, like for the OECD, they have created the corporate guide, which gives you bronze, silver, and gold accreditation. So these kind of things, positive mentions, having the CEO sitting on board and talking about gender equality and gender balance. These things are all very positive to organizations. And putting those onto a roadmap with a clear budget definitely helps to advance the case rather than just sitting and just talking about it.
Yes, I feel like you're building a world. It's like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like more detail than building an entire planet Earth, you know. I love that you mentioned just about the revenue. And before I go, we have to go. I want to ask you, revenue is a big thing. You're right. As we people to have this kind of initiative and to do everything that you just mentioned, revenue has to be obtained. How do you generate that money? And are you, you know, where can, who can help and how can we get there to help you?
All right. If we talk about gender diversity, I mean, the revenue comes through the marketing, through the sales. So especially the innovations, for example, that is always a very easy one to capture. Now, since we started in Saudi with a female driving, if we include females in the marketing department and have a higher percentage over there, they can cater to the female needs so that cars can be built that attract female customers and the right colors and the right features. You know,
yes.
They can talk the language of other females, the same, you know, like any country. So, for example, you have,
yes.
You have an Arab, you have an American, you have, how would I say, a British person. All of them might have different needs, and the more diversity we have, regardless of whether it's gender or any other, how would I say, minority or majority group.
Yes, yes.
If there's a balance, especially in the innovation, we will come with far better ideas as it's only the same trail of thought. And that can be easily seen when we look at our revenue targets, because the products are just going to be better and are going to be much more related towards what the customer actually needs.
You know, it's funny to say this, but in what I've learned so much from you, and what I hear and what I feel is that we must be able to say what we need, speak out, let people know there's that marketing,
yes.
And awareness first of what we need, then being able to get it out there to the world, and then
yep.
to actually make the change. And I love that you said that. Where could we reach you if anybody is called just to align with you and learn more from you?
Well, my email is Aisha, A-I-S-H-A. Robert@gmail.com.
Okay. And we can also go to Facebook.
That's the most easiest way of reaching me, or you can reach me on Facebook or LinkedIn.
Okay.
I think those are the easiest ways. Aisha Robert, you will find me there.
Yes, and you have such lovely, you know what it is, every time I go to your Facebook page, you're always doing and speaking to somebody that's of, you know, in a level and a position that can help you to where you're going to do. You're always proactive. I love that. And you seem so very effective, and you're such a pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa. It was such a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I can't believe this time is so quickly wrapped up, but everybody, you've been listening to the most wonderful, wonderful Aisha Robert, and we are saying goodbye, but come back because we have another amazing guest, and Aisha, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank
okay?
you, Lisa.
Okay, bye.
If you come ever to Dubai, please give me a ring. Thank you.
I sure
bye.
Will. It's so pretty there. Yes, okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicent, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
Obstacles equal opportunities.
Are you living without success in your life? Are there obstacles that you need to overcome to create that success? Challenging circumstances, feeling vulnerable, afraid to be authentic, lacking or even feeling like you've lost your personal power. Light on Living has just the interview series to help you ignite your confidence and your personal drive to overcome whatever challenges you face. Join us every Monday in July to learn how these entrepreneurs overcame damaging business experiences, financial ruin, and personal hardships as they show you how to move forward with poise, grace, and insight. So get your copy of Obstacles Equal Opportunities, Volume 2, The Enlightened Journey, and join us as we go live with these empowered authors.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt Pure Love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Well, welcome back, everyone. We are continuing for the second half, and sadly, but excitedly all at the same time, the final wonderful co-author of The Magnetic Entrepreneur. So as you know, we've been doing this series all this month, really, really building up. This is for women leadership, and every woman has just been so incredible, sharing not only their personal side of things in their chapters and on air here, but and then allowing us to go a little deeper with them. So we are concluding, and I'm just so excited that this lovely co-author is at the bookend of it, and I want to welcome Serena Brown Travis to the show. Welcome, Serena.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here, and thank you for being awesome and doing what you're doing.
You are just going, you've been sharing all these shows with everybody on your page there, and it's just what an opportunity for all of you guys to be together and meet.
Well, you know, this has been great. I think Robert J. Moore, we owe him really a lot of credit, and certainly we're so grateful for the gift that's working through him to have put together such a massive project, but the collaboration between all of the ladies, I mean, it has just been inspirational. I'm honored to be a part of it, but I've actually had to pinch myself to just be grateful that I'm in this platform and have the opportunity to share this stage with so many dynamic women.
Oh, that's a great word, dynamic. You know, I don't think I've used that word all series. So, hey, oh my God. Well, let me just share with everybody a little bit who you are from your bio in the book that they'll have to get so they can read the whole chapter. Mm-hmm. But everybody, I just want to introduce you to Serena Brown Travis. And Serena Brown Travis is an Ohio native and daughter of the legendary motivational speaker Les Brown. Since her and her family's life work has been full of positivity, motivation, and inspiration, having small goals was not an option. While shooting for the moon to land among the stars, Serena earned her Bachelor of Arts from Hampton University and Master's in Marketing and Communications from Franklin University. She is also motivated about reaching young people with her message of positivity. Outside of viewing the glass half full and acting as the business manager for Les Brown Enterprises, Serena enjoys spending time as a volunteer for various nonprofit organizations, singing in the shower, and planting hugs and kisses on her husband and two daughters. Oh, it's so cute. That does sound like it's full of love and positivity. I love the thing, planting hugs and kisses. Did you write that?
I love my family. I love my family.
But you know what? And you're in a family business. So do you ever feel like there are people who just aren't in your family? Or is everybody just a big family?
You know, everyone is a big family. Thankfully, we never meet a stranger. Now, of course, I'm not gullible. There are some people that you go, our personalities are not going to mix so well.
Right.
For the most part, I never meet a stranger. And I always love, you know, connecting with, having conversations with, laughing with, collaborating with, all of those good things with strangers. So, I never meet a stranger.
Yes, I think it's funny that we were even going there because your chapter, which is titled "I Prefer the Back of the Room," that it's so funny because here we are, like, oh, I never meet a stranger. We're out talking to people and connecting, and it's so funny because if we get that vision right away of somebody at the back of the room, they're not going to be talking to anybody, you know.
Well, you know, it depends on what they do. So, in my case, I prefer the back of the room as the chapter title. I used that because I was shy. I didn't want to be recognized or praised, but I knew how to turn on the back of the room charm. So, In my case, I let it work in my favor. That if you want to have a conversation with me, then you got to meet me in the back of the room and we can talk all day. But if you want me to be out front and to show my gifts and talents and to expand outside of my comfort zone, that will not happen. So come to the back of the room, and you'll find a friend.
Oh, my gosh. Not only do I think that should be the title of your next chapter or even a book, I feel like, oh, I just came to the back of the room to talk to you. And I'm so excited.
Right. Okay. Right. But no, you know, in terms of the title in the book, I intentionally hid myself in the back of the room. And so growing up with Les Brown as my father, you know, many people gravitated towards him, and that was great. And so between myself and my siblings, we did everything we could to just, you know, be a support. Be it we sell products in the back of room and, you know, help Dad sign autographs and, you know, all of the stuff that comes along with helping someone in the public eye. And so because of that, I then forewent my talents. I love to write. I took years off of writing. I didn't even put a pen and paper in my hand to even be creative. And so I shrunk myself, if you can imagine. I shrunk myself. And many people go, oh, I prefer to back a room. And for many reasons, you know, maybe you're shy. Maybe you're naturally shy. But maybe your feelings have been hurt or your gifts have been challenged or you don't feel like you're talented enough. And so you just intentionally hide yourself and hide your abilities to be in the back of the room. And I actually, for the past 3 years, went through a process. I mean, everything in my life just seemed to go wrong. And then I realized what was going on is that I was not sitting in my truth. I was not being truthful to who I was. I was not, using my gifts and talents to help other people. And so this is how I got to, you know, create this title, being in the back of the room.
I love that. Actually, I wrote down one of your lines, but you said, I hid myself by celebrating others. And I would love for you to touch on that because, interestingly enough, right now we are celebrating. You're celebrating your co-authors. You're celebrating, you know, Robert. But we're not hiding. So there is a fine line there. How would one know? How can they become more aware if they're hiding behind that in celebration or simply just getting caught up in it and enjoying it?
Right. Well, you know, I think that we are all supposed to celebrate each other's successes. And so, as a friend, as a sister, as, you know, a wife, like if anyone ever has good news, I am the first person who loves to celebrate with you. What the difference is that when you realize the only thing you're doing is celebrating other people and you don't have anything that you can celebrate for yourself. And that is the difference. And so, you know, the little small victories that I had, I kept them quiet because I felt like I could do more. I was embarrassed at where I was in my life and, you know, I could have been making way more money than I was making. I wasn't doing that. And so with that being said, I think that it's important to make sure that you have people who can equally celebrate you. And so, you know, yes, I can celebrate you. It's great to be on the show. But maybe in a couple of weeks, then you'll say, hey, Serena, so what's new in your life? But I hated that question. I didn't want anyone to ask me that question because I wasn't doing anything. Didn't feel like I was doing anything worth celebrating, worth talking about, and I think that's what the difference is. So I actually had to do a self-analysis for myself to figure out what was going on, why was I so unhappy, why was I everyone's cheerleader, but could not get one good idea of mine off of the ground.
I love that you said that. I can't, you know what? Wow. Thanks for coming up with a fantastic response to that one off the cuff. But what I love so much was that you said equally celebrate. And we just got off talking off the previous show about talking about equality. So I was like, oh, my gosh, you see, it's everywhere. It's even in celebration and how we, you know, is it equal? And I love the two keys there just to highlight. It was we know the difference. It's that we're only celebrating others and we don't have our own or want to share our own successes. So that was
right.
Wow, look at you. there was something I just loved, and I can't remember if it was your quote or perhaps your father's, but let go or be dragged. Does that sound? That one hit me so much. And like, wow, did you have to let go of wanting to sit in the back room? Or where does that come and fit in?
Yeah, I had to let go of a lot of things. I had to let go of some relationships. I had to let go of some stinking thinking, as people say. I had to literally I was searching for significance. And so in my search for significance for myself, I had to make a choice to choose better relationships, choose things that were only going to feed me, that was only going to empower me. And so, yeah, if you continue, first of all, I remember as a kid, you know how you'll say, mom, dad, I want this person to come to the party, this person. And they're like, no, everyone can't come. So you have to look at when you're getting to a new space in your life and a new dimension and you're reaching for new heights, everyone can't come. everyone could not go with me. And so let go or be dragged. And so I spent years being dragged. I was being dragged behind, you know, bad relationships, bad choices, all of those good things, and or all of those bad things, rather. And so I had to make it a point in my life to let go, be it if it was a painful relationship that I was used to, let go or be dragged.
Everyone can't come. That is so – I posted this morning on Facebook. It said, decide the life you want and then say no to everything else.
Yes, I saw that, and I thought that was perfect. That was perfect. In fact, you may see that again.
Yes, oh, I hope so. Well, yeah, it had such an impact because that was the first thing I read this morning. I went, oh, my. And what you just said now, I have even more of an image now because I'm thinking of, like, being a little girl and wanting to invite people to party. And Mom and Dad saying, okay, whoa, hold on.
Everyone can't come. Everyone can't come, you know. And so, and that's for me the premise of let go or be dragged. Everyone could not come to a new level, to the level where I was coming from, or, you know, trying to reach for. And so, yes, I had, like I mentioned, I had to let go of relationships and let go of choices that were not affecting me. And when I say let go of relationships, a lot of times we are in relationships where we're only serving the other person. Okay, it's not being reciprocated at all. And so I had to decide, listen, I'm not here for you, for your convenience. I have my own thoughts, my own gifts, and I have to explore and bring those to the forefront.
That was actually perfect. You brought you because you're looking and say, "Okay, I love that. I was not born here for your convenience." But you've actually bring up my next question, which was, in order to quote unquote let go, we have to find out what the underlying patterns, habits, and roadblocks are. And when you were doing that, I think that's a great way to start off, is saying, okay, who's serving who? Is it equal? Is it, you know, getting me to the next level? But when you say roadblock, let's say somebody came up to a roadblock, and like it's not a habit anymore, it's not a pattern, it's a roadblock, and they feel like they can't move it. Where could they start to have a little bit of faith that they can get around that?
Right. Well, I think first of all, we have roadblocks all of the time. And so some, you know, you speak to it. I know in the Bible it says speak to the mountain and it should move. But I also think that when you have a roadblock, be it whatever it is, that you need to take a real look and do a self-evaluation. Maybe why is this here? Maybe it doesn't need to move right away.
No.
Why is it here and what can I learn from it? The one thing in the Bible that God says to Adam, he says, Adam, where are you? That meant that Adam had to look around and see what was he doing? Where was he? What am I doing right here? So every roadblock for me is not meant to immediately be moved out of the way. There may be some things that I learned from the roadblock. Even the bad relationships that I've had, I appreciate those because now it makes me a better friend. It has made me a better wife, a better parent. And so all roadblocks don't need to be immediately moved. They do eventually need to be moved. But I think the first thing you need to do is to figure out why is it here and how will this benefit me? And then after you do that, then, you know, if you realize this is not good for me, this is not healthy, I need to, then you go through that process of trying to figure out how to move it. And sometimes you just simply need to turn around and go in a different direction.
I mean, like this.
You know, there are some battles that are not meant to be fight, not meant to be fought, rather. And so you just look and you go, oh, you know what? This is not for me. Let me readjust, recalibrate, and redirect my energy. And so, like I said, some are meant to be moved and others you learn from, you cut your losses, and you walk away.
Yes, I love it. You know, I have a T-shirt that says, oops, with a big exclamation mark on it, and I'm going to add to it, wrong way, oops, wrong way.
Right, right, right. I mean, that's perfect. That is perfect, yeah.
We're going to have T-shirt lines after this, Serena.
Indeed, I agree.
Well, I wanted to ask you, okay, now I really, this was my, if I could only ask you one question, I want to ask you this question. Okay, and maybe there's not, I don't know. But what is the difference between, or can you help, one, see the difference between ambition and potential?
Mm.
Yeah, I'll let
you
think of
it. I know. I love these questions. I should have had you email them to me prior to this show.
I didn't know that that was the only one I knew.
Right, right. Well, okay, so I think of ambition. Ambition for me, I once had a manager. I was applying to a school, and the question asked, what are one of Serena's weaknesses? And she wrote down that Serena is over-ambitious. And I thought, what does she mean by that? You know, I was nearly offended by her response. And of course, I still had to go to work every day and act like everything was cool. But I was that, so ambition, when you say that, it always brought me back to that story. And so when I look at ambition versus potential, I think for me, they are both the same because I was naive enough. I mean, like I said, I had to take what she said, even though I was terribly offended by it, and then, you know, flip it into what was the positive or what is the positive for my life. If I'm ambitious, I love the idea of being ambitious enough that my potential, that I don't even think about what my limitations are because I know what my potential is. So therefore, I know my potential, I know my gifts, I know everything that I can bring to the table, and then therefore, I'm going to be ambitious enough to go for it. It's just like a bumblebee. A bumblebee does not know that his or her little wings really should not be able to lift its body.
Right.
They don't know that. So their potential and their ambition to fly around and sting us or to pollinate and to bring us wonderful honey, they don't know the difference.
Oh.
And so I think that if, you know, what would happen if someone sat down and said, hey, Bee, do you know that your wings really should not be able to carry you? Your body's way too heavy. What would happen? What would happen if they were foolish enough to believe someone sitting them down and saying, you're being too ambitious. You really don't have the potential to do that. It will crush your spirit. It will kill them. And so for me, same thing. I think it's great to have ambition because you know your possibilities, your potential for you, it's unlimited. No one could tell a bee that they're too heavy for their wings.
Yes, they fly all the time. Awesome, awesome analogy. Oh my gosh, and I'm still thinking about them right now, those little bees. And that is so, you say live your true potential by breaking through those limiting beliefs, which I love that. And I actually, you know what I kind of got? I feel like ambition is that essence and that spirit of knowing your potential and not focusing on limitations, you know, those
Absolutely.
Limiting beliefs.
You have no roadblocks. You look at children when they fall, when they're trying to walk and they fall, they fall. In our case, if I fell one time, hey, I'm sitting down. But they don't know. They don't know. So they know, wait a minute, I took a few steps. Let me try it again. I took a few more steps. Oops, I just fell. Let me try it again. They're ambitious and they have potential all at the same time. So they're blind to the items that are impossible. They're only looking at the possibilities. And I think that's what, if we only looked at the possibilities in our own lives, we wouldn't have to have all of these self-help books to get us past our own limiting beliefs for ourselves. But we do. And so thank goodness for people like my father, people like Robert J. Moore and Bruce and all of the women who are part of this book. Thank God for people who are just transparent enough to say, hey, I tried, I failed, I tried again, and I succeeded.
Yes, and I love that, so celebrating the successes. What is one of the most recent successes that you maybe never thought you'd get to over or do or be able to, and that now you're here, you did it?
Well, that's a really good question. Here lately, it's like I've been on a snowball. Great things happening in my life, so I'm so grateful. So I recently, with my husband and my family, we opened up a restaurant. You'll hear a lot of people say, oh, my goodness, you know, a restaurant, that's the fastest industry for failure. You know, never open a restaurant. And so all of the odds were really stacked up against us. Well, since we've opened in February, the thing I'm grateful for is that we have really bloomed and blossomed much faster than I could have ever dreamed or imagined. So I'm in seminary school as well. And so I thought, okay, great, we're gonna open in February. It's a little colder here. So, you know, it may take people more time to get out and, you know, people may not come out to support right away. I was wrong. And thank God it literally took off. it literally took off. And so that's the one thing. I think it's not mainly, it's not to, you know, boast or brag about the business and what we're doing, but to really just be grateful. I'm so grateful that that God has really shown his promises, that the idea that when you actually want to do something and you put your mind to it, you put your heart to it, you try to make sure you've done everything right, and then it works. I think that's the biggest one for me, that you can go, oh my goodness. Now, of course, there's stress every single day, because of course you have to make sure you're 100% every single day. But that's one of the most recent, you know, successes that I could say I'm so grateful that this actually worked out.
And what, so first of all, congratulations. I'm so excited.
Thank
for you. And
you.
By the way, whenever it's cold, people eat a little more. I know I eat a little bit
this
more
is
when
true.
It's cold, so that's good. Open in February. I go.
But you know, I'm noticing that people don't need a reason to eat. I mean, either they're happy, they eat, they're sad, they eat, they're hungry, they eat. So, you know, it's honestly, it's a blessing to be a part of the restaurant industry. I get to meet so many different people. You know, some people are, like I said, they're happy, they're sad, whatever the occasion is, but it has literally been one of our greatest joys.
Okay, and I must ask you, what is the name of your restaurant and what kind of food?
It's called The Good Kitchen 614. So if you're ever in Columbus, Ohio, please stop by, or you can just follow us on Facebook. I always have a motivating something at least once a week where, you know, I may embrace one of the customers or, you know, have an encouraging word. So go and like our page, share and like our page. But, yes, The Good Kitchen 614.
That's actually beautiful that you do that, because you are now truly pairing and fueling your business with gratitude, with love, with sharing, with community. And that's a good – it's funny because I wanted to ask you about lead with vision and strategy. It's something that I captured when I was reading your chapter, and I thought, what a fabulous way to do a thing. If you could share with us, like – is it the vision? You have a vision, it's a dream, and then you have a strategy. Is that how you start all the time, and how does that work?
Well, you know what? Sometimes for me, the idea pops in my head. You go, oh, wait a minute. Am I supposed to do this? Was this just a grand idea? And so I'll sit on it for a while. And so I'll sit and toil with it. And I know some people, like my husband, he's the type, he'll get a good idea, and he immediately starts running. That's not me. I'm far more cautious. I'm far more, you know, I'm kind of like the analytical side. You know, let's see what other businesses have done this before. And, you know, so, but for me, so I'll get an idea, I'll toy with it for a while, I'll read about it, and then eventually I have to give my dad credit for this quote. He always says, leap and grow your wings on the way down. If I continue to look at strategy and to look at case studies and to figure out who says what, you would literally talk yourself out of every single thing considered.
Yes.
So if you leap and grow your wings on the way down, you'll just go for it. And that, you know, we have Nike who says, just do it. Just do it. Don't think about it. Just do it. So I'm literally kind of a mix of both, you know. And so sometimes my husband will have an idea, and I'll go, hubby, let's put the brakes. Let's figure this out. And then other times, even as for this restaurant, we came across and we just dived. We literally went head first.
And it's beautiful, and it's all working out. And I'm so glad that all the stories that is shared. That is so beautiful, and it was a perfect example of a real in action. Just do it. And so from here, are you still speaking? Like right now, as I want to make sure everybody gets an invitation to, yes, come by the restaurant, absolutely, The Good Kitchen 614, Columbus, Ohio,
right.
And like them on Facebook. But do you coach? Do you want any speaking? Like,
you know, I have a few children's books that one went number one on Amazon, and so I was so grateful
yay.
For that. And so, yes, I am a children's author, and the reason being, the goal of my books is to speak nothing but positive words only. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes as children, we were told things that we still remember, we still can't shake. And my goal is to, you know, create books and create scenarios that young people have that they can see themselves on the pages of the book. So mm-hmm. if in their personal life, if they're battling hunger or, you know, I don't know, homelessness and things like that, some of my books address those tougher topics that aren't in many children's books. And my main character, her name is Penny, so she's super optimistic. You know, life has really kicked her butt, for lack of a better term, but she's optimistic, contagious among her friends. And so I have, like I said, I have five of them. One will be coming out hopefully by the end of this year called Oh my goodness, it just slipped my mind because I'm working on so many projects. They'll come to me. But nonetheless, in case I forget to tell you. And it's really for parents who, like myself, you know, we're so busy making sure we drop our children off at soccer and dance and cheer and all these other things. But have I slowed down enough to tell you just how beautiful you are and I'm for being smart and, you know, things like that. So I am a children's author. You can find me at SerenaBrownTravis.com. I'm also on Facebook. I'm real easy to find, SerenaBrownTravis.com. And that's it. SerenaBrownTravis.
That was absolutely perfect, Serena. It has been such a pleasure to meet you this way and speak to you. I can't wait to meet you in person and everybody. This has just been the most incredible series of Magnetic Entrepreneur for Women Leadership. And Robert J. Moore, thank you so much for bringing all of these co-authors and women and leaders all together to create such a powerful book. And again, Serena, it's just been such a pleasure to have you. Thank you for all your lovely stories.
You as well. Keep up the good work, and I appreciate everything you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Everyone, this has just been an incredible time. We want you to go pick up a copy of the book. We want you to reach out to each one of those co-authors, all of them. I mean, each one that just touches you. So join us next month for another whole series. We'll keep you tuned in at my Facebook page, Lisa Berry, or Light on Living. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.